You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
The Me Too movement could be the start of something terrific if it's seen as a act of rebellion by women against the loose sexual morals that have prevailed for the last several decades.
Help me keep the law of God. Not the law of God as I want it to be, but the law of God as is revealed in Scripture is the only way to really show love to your neighbor and love to God.
Our Good Shepherd will not abandon us, and even if we lose every other memory we have, we will still remember the voice of our Shepherd.
This is Joel from Nebraska and classical guitarist. Love, Issues, etc.
There are things that are very difficult for us to see. We often say, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And there are images that operate this way. We live in a world of images. We live in a world where we are bombarded by images all the time. What's the difference between the way Americans thought about, say, the First World War and the Second World War, and maybe even a little bit of Korea and Vietnam? What's the difference there? A lot of it has to do with the fact that they were daily bombarded with unfiltered images of what was really going on the battlefield. Those previous wars provided them images, but they were largely filtered images of what was happening. The information was being carefully curated, carefully screened for public consumption. All sorts of reasons for that. Political, decency, things like that. But when we see a thing for what it really is, it's hard to ever think again about it the same way you did before when it changes your mind. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, July the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the importance of images in the civil rights movement. They've reopened a case that in many ways introduced the United States to the brutality of the Jim Crow era and discrimination and lynchings, the Emmett Till murder case from 1955, and the pro-life movement as well. Scott Klusendorf will be our guest. Dr. Mike Middendorf will join us at about the halfway point in this hour. We'll talk about a recent Rachel Held Evans column in the Washington Post titled "The Bible is Literature for the Resistance." And then Pastor Chris Roseborough will join us for a regular feature, This Week in Pop American Christianity. We're going to talk about Robert Morris's claim that everyone can be a prophet. We'll round everything off by playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, a simple game we like to play with our listeners. We play four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. You call 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC, or go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. You vote for the one you think should be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Joining us to talk about the importance of images in the civil rights movement and the pro-life movements, Scott Klusendorf. He's president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Todd, good to hear your voice, and it was great to see you in St. Louis last month.
It was fantastic to have you as a speaker there at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. You just completely knocked it out of the park. It was a grand slam all the way.
Well, thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Not only in terms of making the case, but you are obviously a very gifted and well-practiced speaker. I was deeply impressed.
Well, thank you. That makes my day.
Okay. One thing you mentioned in your Issues Etc. Making the Case conference presentation was the story of Emmett Till. Why did you mention this teenager from the 50s when making the case for life?
Well, the Emmett Till story involved a 14-year-old African-American boy who in the summer of 1955 took a journey from Chicago, where he lived, to visit his cousin in the town of Money, Mississippi. And when he got off the train there, he began to brag to his cousin almost immediately about the two white girlfriends he had back home in Chicago. And of course, his cousin and the friends of the cousin down there didn't believe him, because in Money, Mississippi in 1955, if you were black, you didn't even make eye contact with white people, let alone date them. And when he persisted on his insistence that he had two white girlfriends, they dared him to talk to a white girl down there. And later that afternoon, the group of boys, Emmett and the cousin, went into Bryant's grocery store, a rundown little shack of a store that would look about one-tenth the size of a convenience store we see today. He walked into that store where there was a 21-year-old married woman behind the counter. He purchased a piece of gum from her. And though the reports vary, the basic storyline is that he either whistled at her harmlessly or said something to the effect of "thanks, babe," and flashed her a smile as he completed purchasing the gum transition. Well, 2 days later, this kid, actually 2 nights later, in the middle of the night, this kid is taken at gunpoint from his uncle's home where he is staying for the summer by the woman's husband and another man. They beat him savagely, breaking nearly every bone in his upper torso, and then finally throw his lifeless corpse into a river. And when the sheriff discovers the body, he just puts what's left of Emmett in a box, not even a coffin, ships the body back to Emmett's mother, Mamie Till. And then the world was shocked with her announcement. The press gathered around her and said, "What are you going to do, Mrs. Till?" And she said, "We're going to have a funeral for my son, and it's going to be an open casket funeral." Of course, the press went ballistic, Todd. They couldn't believe this. They said to her, "You cannot do this. People will be upset by the grisly image of your boy. Do you realize the condition he's in?" And she uttered these unforgettable words. She said, "I know, but I want the whole world to see what they did to my boy." And that black and white photo of Emmett in the coffin was published nationally in Jet magazine, and it helped launch the civil rights movement in this country.
How does that bear upon the issue of the unborn?
It shows us that oftentimes when you're dealing with a culture that wants to deny essential truth, you have to change how people feel as a predicate to changing how they think and ultimately behave. And when the nation saw the picture of that boy in the coffin, that gruesome black and white image that was published nationally, it reawakened in people their moral intuitions. And in the case of abortion, Todd, we have millions of Americans who have bought into the lie that abortion is a preference issue like choosing chocolate ice cream over vanilla, and they're going to keep thinking of it that way until they see it. I remember going back to my grade school days reading a letter that Frederick Douglass sent to President Lincoln during the Civil War. And in that letter, Frederick Douglass, the great black abolitionist, told the President of the United States, "Mr. President, your arguments on behalf of the slaves' humanity are fantastic. You have won the intellectual debate, but what you haven't won is the conscience of the nation. And we've got to do things to reawaken the conscience of the nation, and that's going to take more fire than it is intellect." Now, Douglass, nor am I, neither one of us are arguing you should use emotion in place of reasons, but the pictures are valuable adjuncts to reawakening moral intuitions in people who would rather deny the truth.
I think the analogy for me, the Emmett Till one is perfect. The analogy for me also has to do with the Holocaust Museum.
Yes.
No one objects to the fact that there are images displayed there and then published widely, you can see them any place, that are deeply disturbing, that you wouldn't want children to view without deep explanation and context. But the point of putting those images on display for the world to see is to show people what the Holocaust really was, what happened under Nazi-occupied Europe, Nazi rule there, during those terrible years.
Oh, you're exactly right. In fact, if you look at middle school textbooks, you will see images of bodies stacked like cordwood in the death camps of the former Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. There were middle school youth groups that took their students to go see The Passion of the Christ, which was 103 minutes of gruesome imagery. They also took their students to see movies like Schindler's List, and I understand why they did it. They didn't do it to manipulate the students emotionally. They did it because the imagery presented conveyed essential truths in ways words alone never can. And the same is true with the abortion issue, Todd. If we're going to present it in an intellectually honest manner, we've got to follow the Socratic truth quest wherever it leads, and that includes looking at imagery we may find disturbing.
Talk a little bit about the connection between the picture of Emmett Till's corpse and the civil rights movement, especially Rosa Parks.
Well, it's interesting because 3 months after the Emmett Till events, those tragic events, Rosa Parks was told to go to the back of the bus in Montgomery, Alabama. And in her memoir, she gave us the kernel of truth that she latched onto that gave her the courage to stand her ground and defy the order. And she said, "I couldn't shake the image of that boy out of my head." What boy? Emmett. And it was that gruesome image that had awakened in her inner sense of courage to stand her ground. And I think we have millions of Christian pro-lifers, Todd, who are attitudinally pro-life, meaning they think abortion is wrong, but they are not motivated to make the sacrifices necessary to stop the killing. As a colleague of mine, Greg Cunningham, puts it, they feel badly enough just to salve their conscience, but not enough to stop the killing. And until we can get people behaviorally committed to stopping abortion, it's going to be difficult to turn that around. And pictures can help that way in ways words alone can never do.
This has to be done in a prudent and wise way. It's not simply a matter of flashing pictures on billboards indiscriminately. Talk about the wise way that we do these things. I think you might even argue, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this change of heart has to, as you just insinuated, has to start with the pro-life community first before we go to the public.
Yeah, good point, Todd. Within the pro-life community, I think you've seen one of two mistakes made with visual aids. Pro-lifers either use them poorly, meaning they run up to people, shove them in their faces with no warning, no preparation, no context, or they don't use them at all. There's a third way to use these images to great effect, and that is to use them wisely, to prepare your audience for what they're about to see, and make sure that when the images are shown, people are prepped to receive them in the way we want them to receive them. So, for example, whenever I speak at a Catholic or Protestant high school, which I speak to thousands of students every year, I always tell the students exactly what they're going to see in the short 55-second video that I show them. It's not a long video, only 55 seconds. And then I invite them to look away if they wish not to view what we're going to show them. And then I do a third thing that I think is essential for us to do as Christians. I present the Christian gospel. And I do that because I want those who may have been wounded by abortion to know that there is hope for them. And the great thing, Todd, when you show the images correctly, you don't need to use heavy-handed rhetoric. The pictures do the heavy lifting for you. And then you can use those images to point people to the gospel, to Jesus, who is the only one who can resolve their post-abortion guilt and shame. So we don't have to choose between showing pictures and making everybody angry and hurting post-abortion men and women or not showing them at all. There's actually a third way, and that's to use them correctly. And when we do, I think they're redemptive.
Yesterday, I had a conversation with Teresa Bonapartis, who runs a post-abortion counseling group called Lumina. And she told the story of her own abortion that took place, I believe, in the late 60s, if I'm not mistaken. And she was pressured by her father as a teenager into having an abortion. And she said it was a technique that was used at the time, was a saline abortion. So she said she actually saw her son after the abortion was concluded. And she said something remarkable. She said, "I'm actually glad that I did, because I can never deny what I did there. I can never say that didn't happen." It galvanized her opposition to the yes. taking of the unborn's life.
And the kindest thing we can do as Christians, Todd, is not help people cover up their post-abortion guilt, but to help them see it for what it is, then point them to Christ, who is the only one who can absolve that guilt for them. We don't do people any favors when we allow them to leave their sin uncovered, because all that does is keep them out of full fellowship with Christ. I'd rather kindly, but truthfully, expose the truth and then point them to the only one who can fix their problem.
In living in an image-saturated culture as we do, it seems almost impossible that there could be an Emmett Till kind of moment with protecting the unborn. We're just saturated with images. I looked at the picture of Emmett Till in his coffin yesterday, and it was gruesome to behold, but, in my course of my 54 years, I've seen an awful lot of things as gruesome. It didn't shock the way I'm sure it shocked in 1955.
Well, it's interesting. I'm going to go here on experience, and it's experience that's backed up with our own survey data that we have conducted in Catholic and Protestant high schools where I've spoken and used these images. The pictures hit very hard, and they do resonate very deeply with the audiences. I know in my own case, Todd, I wouldn't be in this work today if I had not seen abortion in November of 1990. And there I was at a pastor's gathering where there should have been 100 other pastors, and it was me and 5 other guys and their wives. And the speaker showed an image-based video of abortion that was 8 minutes long. I had never seen abortion, and I sat there and wept, Todd. And I thought, I'm no different than the priest and the Levite who passed by on the other side of the road. They said they opposed the violence done to the beating victim, but they didn't act like they opposed it. And Jesus said they weren't loving their neighbor. And I watched those images, and that parable struck me like a ton of bricks. And I went home and told my wife, I said, I think my whole world's been changed. Now, obviously, in my speaking, I do way more than just show pictures, but I am telling you, Todd, those images moved me in a way no lecture would have, and we hear the same thing today from students again and again and again everywhere we go.
Finally, then, you said at the beginning, once the heart or the emotions have been changed on this issue, where it engages and we no longer can say, I don't know what it looks like or I don't care. Then we work on the head. We work on the way we think. Why is that so important, too?
Well, I think Neil Postman put it real well when he said our primary epistemology today is image-driven. And by that, he meant we do most our learning from television. And you can imagine what that's like now that we have smartphones going off in our pockets 24/7. And Postman's point, and mine, is that in a visually saturated culture, you sometimes have to change how people feel as a predicate to changing how they think. And by moving them emotionally, you open them up intellectually to consider ideas they had before then just dismissed.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase this book and learn more about Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, thank you very much and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd. Look forward to being with you again.
When we come back, Dr. Mike Middendorf joins us. He's author of a 2-volume Concordia commentary on Romans. We're going to be talking about a recent column by Rachel Held Evans in the Washington Post titled, The Bible is Literature for the Resistance. She talks in there about Romans 13, about how Paul died at the hands of the Roman government for, well, his own form of resistance. Is she reading it correctly?
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.